This special festive edition of Section D was first broadcast on Tuesday, the 25th of December 2012 on Monocle 24. Section D is brought to you in association with Lexis. Hello and a very warm welcome to this very special festive episode of Section D here on Monocle 24 with me, Hugo MacDonald. We've added a touch of holiday sparkle to our regular range of subjects. We've headed to the mountains, we've pushed past Christmas shoppers, and we've knocked on the doors of some of our favourite designers to ask what's on their Christmas wish lists too. Coming up in the next hour, our Milan correspondent Ivan Carvalho heads to Como to see how one family is plying its trade, crafting skis from wood.
The final veneer, the customer can choose which sort of wood he wants on his skis.
So I can have a teak finish?
Absolutely.
Just like in my home, for example?
Absolutely.
I'm joined in the studio by Bernhard Schweitzer, CEO of the eponymous Tyrolean retail fittings manufacturer, who reveals the do's and don'ts of successful Christmas retail displays.
A lot of retailers start to give a lot of extra services to their consumers to say, okay, I would like to help you in this very stressing period.
And we find out what Jonathan Legg, one brother behind Irish craft revival firm Makers and Brothers, would ideally be finding underneath his Christmas tree.
There is a watch I've had my eye on for a long time by the same guy who designed the TGV. His name is Roger Tallon. Yeah, that's a little object I'd like.
Elsewhere, we also talk perfect Christmas presents with Nicola Sacker, creative director of dog and cat outfitters, Mungo and Maud, and Kelly Hyatt, creative director of traditional stationery company, Lagom, too. We'll also head to a couple of our favourite stores around the world to see how they cope with the Christmas crush. And of course, it wouldn't be a festive show without a cracking Christmas tune or two. That's all to come over the next hour here on this special Christmas episode of Section D. We begin this Christmas special over in Italy. Unlike its Alpine neighbours, Italy doesn't boast big-name brands when it comes to making skis. But the country's many family-run firms have shown they know how to carve out a niche with well-made products that are easy on the eye. A case in point is Castiglioni, a maker of parquet flooring, whose owners decided to take their skill with wood and try their hand at building skis too. In 2010, they launched Leaf Skis, and owner Luca Castiglioni and his siblings have seen interest begin to snowball. Monocle's Milan correspondent Ivan Carvalho visited the Leaf Skis workshop south of Lake Como to learn more.
So Luca, just tell me how this project got started.
It started with a barbecue, actually. Yeah. The summertime chat around the barbecue, but actually it's the same thing. So it started with a couple of friends with whom we share the same passion for powder ski. And we said, we found this website in the US where you have instructions or tips on how to make a ski at home. So we said, okay, if they can make it with all the tools and expertise we have in the factory, definitely we can make something better, something great. The ski we make are ski for powder skiing. So are not for on-piste ski, but are for off-piste skiing.
Now, being a company producing doors made from wood, finishing, parquet flooring, moving into skis, how did you test the skis out?
Oh, this was an important part of the process, and I would say even a very fun one, because we have a good network of friends that are excellent skiers, excellent riders. We dedicated the first year just in testing, and the ski went out from Italy, they went to US, they went to Canada, they went to Japan, where you can find really very deep snow. If you look on the website, most of the pictures are coming from Japan. And then at the end, we even tested in our base in Latouil, that is on the Alps near the Mont Blanc. In comparison to the ski you find on the market now. Nowadays you find very shiny skis with fluo design or things like that. You have to consider that every single ski is different from the other, because the wood you use on top, the veneer you use on top, it's different. I mean, you never get two pieces that are the same. They might look the same, but they are not the same, because nature is not standard.
Okay, this is the core of the ski. As you can see, it's made by different kind of wood. This is done in order to give the final flexibility of the ski. So you have harder wood types that gives a more power to the ski, and you have softer one in order to get a lighter ski. In this case, this is the core of what we call a fat wood, and it's done by layers of ash and red cedar.
Okay, now your brother is putting together, this is the core then of the ski, the heart of the ski.
Yes, this is the central process of ski manufacturing, where all the pieces are going together. So on the lower part you have the edges and the base, the sinterized base, and then you have the layup of the glass fiber or carbon fiber. In the middle you have the core, and then again couple of layers of glass fiber, carbon fiber, and what's the finish for us, that is a thin layer of veneer. The final veneer, the customer can choose which sort of wood he wants on his ski. So it's where the ski get personalized to the customer specification.
So I can have a teak finish?
Absolutely.
Just like in my home, for example?
Absolutely. Let's say standard 11 finishes. You have teak, you have walnut, you have ash, you have oak, or whatever you can find on the market in terms of a veneer, you can use it.
I got really surprised when I received a visit from one customer. At the first stage, I was thinking he was complaining because of the scratches on the top of the ski. But then he just kept telling me how he was excited and was keep telling me that scratch was made on the Dolomites. The other one was made on Mont Blanc. The other one was made in the US. Because the ski was becoming like a sort of diary of his runs on the snow. It seems to become very personal, because every scratch is a memory of a beautiful day. So that's the good thing of it. This is a characteristic of wood. It's soft, it's softer than plastic, but the aging of a wooden ski is much better than the aging of a plastic ski. A plastic ski, with the new season, they change the color, it becomes old. I mean, you have an old ski, while with the wooden ski becomes your ski. Every season it improves.
Thank you very much for that, Ivan. Time to hit the slopes, but before we don our salopettes and perfect our slalom turns, let's hear from the first of our design friends about what they are hoping to find under their Christmas tree. First up, it's Kelly Hyatt.
Hi, my name's Kelly from Largham. I'm the creative director. Largham is, I suppose you could call it, a boutique stationery company. This is what I want for Christmas this year. First up is on the list is some nice pottery from a company called Petit Atelier, which is in Paris. The company is owned by a husband and wife, and they only make very small batches of items which can only be purchased through their store, which makes it a lot more personal, I think. The other thing is, which is, it would be very nice, is hand engraved personal correspondent cards, which I think is quite a nice idea. What I like to give this Christmas is something quite personal, I think, and that is homemade tomato chutney. every summer we grow our own tomatoes and we have an apple tree in the garden. And what we do is we pick it and then make it into chutney. And then at the end of the year, when it's matured, we give it to presents at Christmas time. And the other thing that I'd like to give is I have a small dachshund called Hugo, and he'll be getting a mint green collar and a grey lamb's wool blanket, which I'll probably get from somewhere like Mungo or Maud.
That was Kelly Hyatt, creative director of stationery brand Lagom there, revealing to our reporter Hazel Pfeiffer what his perfect Christmas present would be. You're listening to a Christmas special edition of Section D here on Monocle 24. And I'm now joined in the studio by Monocle's creative director, Richard Spencer-Powell. Thank you as ever, Rich, for lending your expert services to the show.
Glad to be here.
I've dragged you down to get your opinion on decoration and graphic design when it comes to Christmas, which sort of takes over any and every inch of wall and ceiling and street and window. And I wrote a piece in Monocle last year saying how, despite the fact that I like to think I have good taste, when it comes to Christmas, I throw it all out the window and love a bit of kitsch. Are you the same?
Let me just say I'm not as controlled as I normally am when it comes to things graphic. I think that with Christmas, it's hard not to throw it all out and be a bit kitsch. It is a slightly kitsch camp festival in a way. I steer clear of tinsel. I think if you can do that and obviously spray on snow is a no-no.
Silver branches,
yeah, they're a bit naff, actually. I wouldn't go as far as the silver branch either.
Are the fairy lights festooning the Spencer-Powell household at the moment?
Yes, there's three sets of fairy lights. I do like Christmas trees and all the decorations. I just loathe putting them up. It's the sort of, it's akin to a day at IKEA for me. I put my back out, I get very grumpy, and yeah.
Sit down with a well-earned beer afterwards.
Yeah, it's a G&T remedy at 7 o'clock, that's for sure.
And Rich, you yourself are tasked each year with designing Monocle's Christmas card, which presumably is not an easy task. How do you go about approaching it?
Well, because we have such a sort of good slate of illustrators, it's always seemed the obvious thing to pull from our resources. So we usually, it's not an award, but it's we use a different one each year. And we just go about, it's a complete open brief. So that's quite nice. So it's a very easy thing to do, actually. And then we just, assemble it here. And the last few years we've been doing series of them, which then are available to buy in our shops.
And they've tended towards sort of graphic rather than, a few years ago there was more humorous illustrations.
Yeah.
There was caricatures of people in the office, which...
Yeah, and that in itself became slightly problematic because...
people leave.
People leave, but also people don't like their illustrated form, which... so unfortunately, one year we did all the research. We took Polaroids of everyone, sort of surreptitiously sent them to our Japanese illustrator, Satoshi, and didn't tell anyone that we were going to do this. And then, lo and behold, sort of first week of December, when staff were given their Christmas cards to send out to all our friends and contributors, suddenly they saw themselves. And one member was particularly aghast that she'd been put in a purple dress, claiming she never wears lilac and why am I the size of a bus? And yeah, never quite forgave us. But Poppy and I secretly found it quite funny.
I think it's a very good way of getting your own back on everybody else in the office at Christmas time. But when it comes to graphic design, it amazes me that for love nor money, it's very difficult to find nicely designed Christmas cards or wrapping paper. And I was in Fortnum & Mason's recently, actually, which I thought, being this British establishment of Victorian Christmas, that their Christmas displays would probably be quite tasteful. But no, it's all sort of gaudy, over the top, a lot of shiny purple baubles, a lot of very cheap materials and things. Why is it so difficult, do you think? And is it just a British thing that we really have gone too far down the kitsch and commercial way?
It could be a British thing. Having just been in Tokyo did seem to do it in a classier way. I think New York's quite a good Christmas town as well. I mean, London should be, and I think in parts it is. I just think if you get too close to the high street or the big streets like the Regent Street and Bond Street, the naffness comes out a bit. And I think the problem with graphic design and Christmas is there are too many sort of visual ticks that we have. and people just revert back to them. They don't think, they don't try and reinvent. And reinvention can also be problematic, but I think we just do what we know how to do, which is, yeah, naff baubles. You know, a graphic designer's drawing a Christmas tree is quite an easy thing to do. They're triangular, great, you know. So I think we just become a little bit lazy. I think we leave it too late. Whereas I think really you should probably start thinking about it in, you know, some awful time like spring and really plan it and then come up with something new and original. But I think too few people just... I'm sure actually someone's just done an enormous print run and they've just got it in a basement and they're just regurgitating it and swapping it between each shop each year round. So there's no new material.
Indeed. I mean, I think actually when we're talking about street decorations, this year in London, it's a step up on previous years, which have always been sponsored by whichever children's family film is hitting cinemas at that time. And yeah. This year it's Marmite, which is surprising.
Very, yeah.
But I quite like it. You have a reindeer butting a big jar of Marmite on Oxford Street.
Yeah, that's not something you see every day or every season, is it? That's certainly new for this town.
No, I know. I'm wondering if you were given the task of creative directing London for Christmas, what would you do? Would you revert back to the triangles of the Christmas tree or with the crown? Or
I'm not sure. It's a difficult question. It's a bit of a conundrum because I like traditional Christmas, and yet, you know, for the rest of the year I'm quite modern and minimal, and like you think I have quite, you know, okay taste. But I think sometimes when you do try too hard, it just goes wrong. And I think with Christmas cards, for example, I just like a traditional, you know, Dickensian scene or, you know, sort of 18th century painting, slightly too big in format, and they're the ones that I think just they don't make any mistakes. And I think it's those traditions, like, you know, berries and, you know, brass bands at Borough Market, I think they're the really nice things. I just think we should do more of those things well. And if I were creative director of London for Christmas, I would try and somehow ban all the commercial aspects of it. I think, you know, I walked along Bond Street today and some window displays were quite nice, but far too many had for sale signs on, and it just does not feel like Christmas when there's a massive 50% off. I mean, that just doesn't, you know, it doesn't smart of generosity.
It's not the spirit of Christmas at all, is it?
Yeah, it's not kind of like, oh, great, 2-for-1 on Burberry Max. It just doesn't feel like Christmas when you do that. So I think a sale should start the 1st of January. Christmas should be kind of just kept for generosity. And I think shop owners should, you know, celebrate the art of display. And they should allow, you know, we should allow ourselves to be seduced by it and not, you know, grabbing armfuls of Uniqlo cashmere because, you know, it's, yeah, 2-for-1 kind of thing. Yeah, exactly. It's a little bit sick in a funny way there.
Indeed. Well, there you have it. Christmas by Numbers by Richard Spencer Powell, Monocle's creative director. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
You're listening to Section D on Monocle 24, our weekly program on the best in design, architecture, graphics, and fashion. Section D is brought to you by Lexus. Lexus, creating a new chapter in amazing design, technology, and driving.
If you're looking for a present for a special person in your life, why not give the gift of a Monocle subscription? £80 a year brings you 10 copies of Monocle magazine straight to your door. Or for just £10 more, you get our large format winter and summer newspapers, Alpino and Mediterranean. Both subscriptions come with 12 months exclusive access to the online archive, include delivery anywhere in the world, and our stylish Rutote tote bag. Also, subscribers have advantage of a 10% discount off everything in one of our 5 Monocle shops, from London to Hong Kong. So head to monocle.com to pick up your subscription today.
Welcome back to this Christmas special edition of Section D. Now, you don't need me to tell you how important retail is at this time of year, be it pre-Christmas present buying or the annual scram of sales shopping that happens barely seconds after the plates have been cleared from your Christmas dinner. One company that knows how shops can get the most out of promoting their wares is 80-year-old Tyrolean family firm Schweitzer. They manufacture retail fittings and fixtures for stores, large and small, the world over. Current CEO, Bernhard Schweitzer, joined me in the studio to deliver his verdict on how shops might best get dressed at this time of year.
I think, first of all, as we all know, for retailers, Christmas is the most important period of the year. It means for them, in many cases, let's say 50-60% of their business. So for them, it's important to have the right moment and to find the right approach for their consumer. It depends a little bit in which kind of sector, which kind of market they're working for. I think today, especially if you talk about high street, more and more the retailers try not to do too much special on certain retailers, just to give the possibility to the consumer, especially in this stressing, very loud period, to have a store or place where they can shop easily. Christmas for everybody means a lot of stress, a lot of things to organize and where I can find what and so on. And so a lot of retailers start to give a lot of extra services to their consumers to say, okay, I would like to help you in this very stressing period. Yes, it's true, they have to do something special because Christmas has to be special, especially in retail. They have to come up with special proposals, with special products, special assortment. But at the same time, I think, and we see it more and more, especially in department stores, it's the period also where consumers are looking for extra services, the possibility,
making gift wrapping.
Gift wrapping or leave there somewhere the big packages they have, the possibility not to be too much stressed. So especially department stores more and more give their consumers the possibility to help them a little bit in this very crazy period. In terms also of presenting the merchandise, it's definitely the period where, as everybody knows, as a personal experience, it's the moment where everybody's thinking about, okay, what can I find? I have to find a present for this and that and this person. And I think there definitely also retailers have a little bit can help in terms of giving good ideas, possibility to come up with special combinations of products, collections of certain things. And I think you have never to forget that the main mission of a retailer is that they have to present an assortment. And also for Christmas, the retailer has to come up with special ideas, things you normally cannot find, or the person you want to give this present, it's not easy for him to find something like that. So I think that normally also for us means that the retailer wants to present it in a different and a special way.
If someone comes to you and says, we're going to completely redesign our store, we're going to tear down the displays that we've had all year, we're going to reshelve and go all out for Christmas, do you say, no, it's not worth it for such a short period, however important that might be for the takings? And
I think more and more the retailers ask us to have very flexible structures and fixtures. They want to change continuously. They want to change all over the year their structures, their offers, and that because we have never to forget, they want the same consumer to come back maybe every week, sometimes every day. So we have to give them the possibility in terms of structures and fixtures to change them, to change their position, to change the way how to present merchandise. So I would say it's in general a trend and important for the retailers to have very flexible structures and the possibility to make extra presentations, especially in this kind of period of the year.
But we're not talking about just cluttering things up with holly and fir and endless tinsel and baubles and things, presumably.
No. We're talking about the possibility to somehow also tell a story, the possibility to have a space inside the store and change the presentation of the assortment in a way that someone comes in and understands the theme. I can tell a story about, yeah, Christmas, but it's a typical man collection. I need a present for a man. Okay, what kind of things I can sell or can make a present for a man? And so I have to present in a different way the merchandise. It's not just decoration. It's really visual merchandising. We're now changed in the KDW, a very luxury department store in Berlin, their lingerie department. And there is a special section for Christmas for men where they can choose, where can have a look. And there will be a special presentation where, because normally the big problem for lingerie departments for men is they're not very, they sometimes have some problems to go in there because everybody's looking strange to them.
They look a bit perverted.
Exactly. And so we created a special area inside the cadeve where men for Christmas can't go inside because it's just for gifts. It's just for presents. And that's our typical situations where I think it's the role, the real mission of a retailer that he has to think about what is the consumer looking for and how can I help him to easily, in a convenient way, find it and buy it.
And finally, as something of a retail expert, what's it like when you go shopping yourself? Are you always looking for the little bits and pieces behind the scenes and thinking, oh, they should be doing that better? Or are you just a consumer like the rest of us?
Well, let's say, first of all, there's a great agreement between me and my wife because she's going shopping and I'm looking to the store and the shop fitting. At the other hand side, when I'm going for shopping, I'm looking for stores, for retailers who are giving something special. I think I have to travel all the year, all over the world. I'm seeing the most beautiful stores. But still, the best thing is when I'm amazed by the assortment, the presentation of the merchandise, and I love to go inside stores where I really can feel and touch that the product they're selling me are real, are authentic. There is a story behind. They explain me how to do it. I just bought a new bag from a famous retailer, from a famous brand, and they took them, I think, 20 minutes just to put my monogram on it, how to change it and ask me how I use my bag and all these kind of things. And together we changed the bag in a way that I can use it in the best way. And that was for me an extremely interesting experience that someone was together with me solving me the problem. That was great, really. That was for me real retailing.
That was Bernhard Schweitzer, CEO of Schweitzer, the Tyrolean retail fittings manufacturer, talking to me in Studio 2 there. Time now to hear from another of our design friends about their Christmas wish list. Here's Nicholas Sacker, creative director of Mungo and Maud, the stunning cat and dog accessories brand based in London.
This year for Christmas, I would really like to receive a big pile of chocolate. And other than that, I've been a bit indulged because I receive my Christmas present early. Usually we're quite low-key at Christmas, but this year my husband decided to spoil me. We work together, so he probably felt that I'd done quite a lot of work this year. And he very kindly bought me a ring with a dog's head, and it's one I'm wearing. It's gorgeous, actually. It's a sort of rose-cut diamonds and little bead eyes and a pink enamel tongue, little head of a terrier. So I don't think I'll be needing anything else other than sleep. I think I'll be giving heaps of panettone. I can't stop shopping at Olivino, which is local to our store in Elizabeth Street. It's amazing Italian delicatessen, so I'll probably be buying lots of panettone from there. And Christmas wouldn't be Christmas without getting my husband glacé fruits from Lillemont in Provence. Sounds a bit extravagant, but he absolutely adores them.
That was Nicholas Sacker, creative director of Mungo and Maud, talking to our Hazel Pfeiffer there. I think it's time for a festive jingle now. And here's my favourite one of all time. This is Chris Rea with Driving Home for Christmas.
Faces. I'm driving home for Christmas, yeah. Well, I'm moving down that line, and it's been so long, but I will be there. I sing this song to pass the time away, driving in my car, driving home for Christmas. It's gonna take some time.
driving next to me. He's just the same. Just the same.
Brooding, evocative Chris Rea, Driving Home for Christmas, a perennial favourite of mine. Despite so many offers, window displays, gaudy decorations and street criers vying for your purchasing power, Christmas shopping can still be a disappointingly uninspiring affair. But every once in a while, we stumble upon that special nugget of a shop that allows you to cover all present bases in one fell swoop. Our Liam Aldus visited one such store in Barcelona, and we've added it to our precious little black address book. It's called Grey Street, and is on Peu de la Creu in the Bourne neighbourhood. Its young Australian owner, Amy Cocker, opened her doors this year, and her unique offering of specially sourced handicrafts isn't just handy for frantic shoppers, it's providing a leg up for both local and international designers too.
So how do you find these designers? Can you tell me a little bit about how you source and you curate the store? Because there's so many products in here. It's a feast for the eyes.
It's true. Yeah, no, there's a lot in here. Well, whenever I travel, I keep an eye out for any products that I love, usually something that's kind of colourful and fun. So one of the products, which is Cavallini, a product from San Francisco, and I saw that at a trade show in New York. And then a lot of the art comes from friends and friends of friends. There's some international stuff as well, but I really want to try and keep it local. Like, I really want to do that whole shop local thing. I think it's really important, especially with the economy in Spain at the moment. It's a little bit tough.
Do you think the shop is beginning to function like a platform for young designers, especially in Barcelona, who'd never had that opportunity before?
Maybe. It's hard to say because it's still early days, but it's possible, and I think I can definitely see we're taking the stepping stones to going in that direction. And hopefully with time we'll have like a lot more people coming in and dropping off, you know, different types of work.
So instead of just sitting here and talking about things, let's take a look around the store and see what's on offer. So what have we got here on this shelf, this very packed shelf?
This is probably one of my favorite things that we've got in the store. It's a stationery brand from Australia, which is designed by a young lady called Sass. And they're really beautifully made, and they're all made with recycled paper and really soft colours, and she spends a lot of time designing the patterns.
What's the brand?
Ask Alice. I was too excited to mention it. There's a really nice nostalgic feeling to it, so that, you know, the owl, which I don't know, it's just like this nice thing. For me, it's just something that I always saw in my grandparents' house, and then the Polaroid camera, the typewriter, a little fox, you know, the classic light bulb. She just does such a great job with the designs, and the paper's really beautiful. I mean, this one, it's like all different coloured papers.
So we've got this beautiful cabinet here now, and it's full of jewellery, and on top there's some great ceramics. So where are the ceramics from?
the ceramics are from a guy called Vicente, who is from Seville but lives in Barcelona. And he spends all his days creating really amazing things. And he's inspired by the Chinese. So basically it's like a little Chinese person lamp. I don't know how to describe it, but...
It's a very plump lamp.
Yes, that's true. It's very plump. And then he has a lot of little bowls. And then there's the mugs as well. And the mugs sell really well. They're really popular. So they're beautiful. We've got a couple of different artists. We've got Helen, who just popped past right now to drop off some more things. Yay! She creates all of these necklaces and bracelets from little vintage things that she finds around town, and then she also just creates some from scratch.
Okay, so now we've just come up to the little workshop, and you've got someone up here working on a patchwork quilt. It's kind of a bit of a metaphor for the store itself. What happens up here?
This is where we create everything. I make lots of things with fabric. There's a big fabric collection there, fabrics that I've collected from all around the world. And we basically just sew and get pretty crafty. The patchwork rug is what we're working on at the moment. And some reversible bags and some badges that are covered in fabric. But this is where we make all of it with the sewing machine. And yeah.
Another interesting feature of Grey Street is its joint venture with Satan's Coffee Corner. It's helmed by local barista Marcos, who serves some of Barcelona's best coffee from the shop's quaint street window. I mean, this is perhaps a little ingenious that you have a coffee corner here, because maybe people come in, they see the coffee stand, they have a coffee, and then with their caffeine high, they decide to purchase something. Do you think there's a little genius strategy underlying there?
I haven't actually thought about it, but I think you could be right, because they definitely get their coffee and then they get in a really good mood. They start to buzz around a bit and look at what there is in the shop. And I haven't thought about it, but I think that could definitely be true.
Overwhelmed by the plethora of gift ideas laid out before me, I ask Amy for her expert advice on giving the perfect gift.
Well, I guess it depends on how well you know the person, but it's always nice to be able to give someone something that you know they're going to really appreciate, or that you know they can connect with. And I guess that's why we try and have like a little bit of everything in the store, and then that way, I mean, my favorite type of gift is like a gift that is made up of like lots of different little things. It's not just one thing. So, you know, you can kind of buy like a mug and then buy like some tea as well, and maybe like a little notebook and some pencils and a bracelet, and put it all together and make it like this little, I don't know, hamper.
That's what this is. It's a hamper store.
The Grey Street hamper.
The Grey Street
maybe
hamper.
You should look into that for winter.
Yeah, I will. I'll put something together. I think we can do that for sure.
For Monocle in Barcelona, I'm Liam Alders.
Thank you very much for that, Liam. Time to hear from our final Christmas wishlist friend. Here's Jonathan Legg, one of two brothers behind the beautiful Irish craft revival firm Makers and Brothers.
What I would like this Christmas... There's a few little things. There's a book I've been looking for ages that's out of print called Arranging Things, A Rhetoric of Object Placement by... And the author is called Leonard Corin. I'd love that book. There is a watch I've had my eye on for a long time, by the same guy who designed the TGV. His name is Roger Tallon. Yeah, that's a little object I'd like. Objects aside, I'd like a week with nothing to do in the west of Ireland, where all you had to do was get up in the morning and go for a swim and walk the dog and eat good food and read books and hang out with my girlfriend. That would be a great gift. This Christmas, I would like to give... I liked giving like a bunch of small presents. There's a really beautiful nutcracker by a British designer called Robert Welsh, cast iron. And I think I'd like to give that to somebody with a big wooden bowl full of nuts, so they get to use it straight away, like giving a remote control car with the batteries in it. And I'd like to buy my girlfriend a piece of Simone Russia. I think last year in one of her collections, she did a very like super oversized metallic silver leather handbag. More like a clutch, actually, like a leather clutch, with a very thick wool yarn cable stitched all around the perimeter. It's a really beautiful piece, or maybe a piece of jewelry by Gemma Holt. Yeah, they're two things, but I don't actually have a set plan yet. Like most men, I'll probably leave all of those little details to the last minute. So even now, me thinking about it is me being very organised.
That was Jonathan Legg, one half of Makers and Brothers, the Irish craft revival firm, talking to our Hazel Pfeiffer there about what he hopes to receive for Christmas. I do hope you were happy with what you found under the tree, Jonathan.
You're listening to Section D on Monocle 24, our weekly programme on the best in design, architecture, graphics and fashion. Section D is brought to you by Lexus. Lexus, creating a new chapter in amazing design, technology, and driving.
Whether you're looking for gift ideas, clothing, or something for the home, we can help. Monocle has a selection of beautifully appointed shops in New York, London, Tokyo, Hong Kong, and our latest edition in College Street, Toronto. Scarves by Drake, wallets by Ettinger, and wine cups by Hakkisan are just a small selection of Monocle's collaborations with designers from around the world. Plus, if you've got any gaps in your collection of Monocle back issues, well, we can help with that too. So do pop in and say hello at any of our Monocle shops.
Welcome back to this festive special edition of Section D. I'm Hugo MacDonald. For our final package, we're off to another one of our new Black Book addresses, to a store in London's Clerkenwell area. Forest London opened earlier this year and sells a wide range of hand-picked mid-century furniture and accessories. For Christmas, founder Ava Coppins called on the services of exquisite publishers Visual Editions to lend a dose of tasteful festive charm to the display. Our associate editor, Santiago Rodriguez Tarditi, popped his head around the door to find out more.
I'm Ava. I'm the director of Forest London, a relatively new shop in Clerkenwell, central London.
Tell me about the concept and the philosophy behind the shop.
Basically, on offer, I have mid-century pieces. So I import everything from Denmark and the Netherlands. And then next to that, I kind of do small collaborations and small runs of contemporary items such as shades and cushions, so you can kind of imagine it in your home a bit better rather than having only vintage in the shop. For Christmas, I invited the publishers called Visual Editions to create a window display and also have a little pop-up shop in my shop. They do these great books which add kind of a visual aspect to the books themselves, and I decided to do this for Christmas because where I'm from, the Netherlands, we have Sinterklaas, which is on the 5th of December, and you get your big presents then. And then for Christmas, you get books under the trees. And they transformed the shop. You know, they made a mural to kind of display their next book that's coming out in the new year too. And for me, it's just really trying to promote things that I believe in and I respect. And Visual Editions is just it's a great example of, you know, one of the kind of companies that I enjoy promoting, because I think they do a wonderful job.
What are the books about? Because I see them from here and they are in fact beautiful editions, very colorful yet simple and very well designed.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you just see the cover, they look like any old book. Some are classics and some are just newly published books. Basically, when you open them up, they show you a different world. So you've got, for instance, the Tree of Codes, which is a book that has lots of holes in the pages, but you can actually read it just page by page by putting your hand behind it. So it's kind of these intrinsic things that you almost think that it's not a book or you can't read it, but then it is actually still a book. You know, they have a great spin to it, which I really enjoy about them.
I was also looking at the window display. It's a very interesting version of a Christmas tree.
It was designed by Sabrina Lee Hammond, and it's basically these branches, and some of them are wrapped in fluorescent wool. So it's definitely a different take on a Christmas tree. But I think the display definitely came from a more visual addition approach. So it's quite bright colors, which is not that it's something I don't have in the shop a lot, but I think it's nice to combine that and kind of contradict, you know, certain elements, because it's quite playful, and I think mid-century furniture can be quite playful as well. It doesn't have to be kind of a rigid and, you know, experience when shopping for furniture, and I think that's something that I'm quite passionate about, making it a fun experience, and I want people to come into the shop and just enjoy the place and, you know, have a browse. They don't have to buy anything. They can feel the wood experience, a desk or a quirky prop. It's just about enjoying the space rather than being a point of sales.
Looking forward to next year, what are your plans for 2013? And do you think the trend will still be dark furniture and very simple design, a revival of mid-century furniture, or would you want to step it up a couple of years and maybe buy some more modern and contemporary Scandinavian and Dutch
That's
furniture?
That's quite an interesting question. I mean, for next year, I'll probably have a mixture of both. I mean, what we're really doing for next year is doing some great collaborations with designers, and it will kind of go into more bigger productions rather than having small runs. So I'll be working with a couple of designers, one for LDF and one for Christmas next year. And then also there's a great Swedish artist who I'm working with to do some upholstery, and we're also very interested in maybe working with leather and printing on it. So I think 2013 is going to be a lot of trials. They'll probably not all work out how I imagine, but I think that's, you know, part of having a small business is that you try stuff out and see where it goes. We're also going to do our own line of fabrics. There will be woolen fabrics for upholstery, so that will be really interesting as well. We haven't decided yet, but we're going to really focus on, you know, amazing quality and great designs, great colorways, the kind of fabric that fits Forest, and will kind of make it stand out as well. And then in terms of new design, I think what I've been adding bit by bit to the shop is some Dutch design, still of the 60s and some bits of the 70s. But I think the kind of mix between, you know, the industrial and the still organic wooden, especially teak look, is quite an interesting match. So I'm kind of doing a little bit of industrial things as well. Other than that, we'll only be selling things under, you know, our own name, rather than, you know, selling items by contemporary Danish designers. We'll always be collaborating rather than selling items that are sold in many different places. So it will always be exclusive in the shop.
And finally, how are you going to celebrate Christmas
this
year?
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, I'm celebrating it with my partner. He's half Swedish, so we're going to have a big Swedish Christmas in England. But yeah, it'd be very Swedish themed, and then spending New Year's in Amsterdam. So it's a mix of both.
Sounds like fun. Are you going to be looking out for new furniture while you're on a holiday, or are you going to be relaxing?
I'll always be on the lookout for new furniture, yeah, definitely.
That was Ava Coppins, founder of Forest London, one of our most cherished new retail destinations in our home city. And that brings us to the end of this special festive edition of Section D. Time to go and tuck into your turkey or goose. Many thanks to our wonderful team of hardy contributors and correspondents, and to the show's masterful editor, Lolita Laguna. If you find yourself suffering from withdrawal symptoms over the Christmas period, fear not, you can download any and every episode of Section D, if you like, from iTunes and from monocle.com too. On the 27th of December at 7 a.m. London time, tune in for my special design hour on The Globalist, where we talk to Dejan Sujic from the Design Museum, Alana Weston from Selfridges, and my round table discussion with four of the biggest names in the world of graphic design too. I'll be back at 1900 hours on January the 1st with a year's roundup of the best of the very best of Section D 2012. In the meantime, I'm leaving you with another festive cracker of a tune. Here's Brenda Lee with Rocking Around the Christmas Tree. Happy Christmas, everyone, and thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Rocking around the Christmas tree at the Christmas party hop. rocking around the Christmas tree. Let the Christmas spirit ring. Later we'll have some pumpkin pie and we'll do some caroling. You will get a sentimental feeling when you hear voices singing. Let's be jolly, deck the halls with boughs of holly. Christmas tree, have a happy holiday. Everyone dancing merrily in the new old-fashioned way.
This year, if I have to walk or crawl all the way, I'm gonna make it.
Christmas Eve will find me. Where the love lights gleam.